Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we are wrestling with a really big question, one that sits underneath, well, pretty much every law code, every government, really.
The question of why.
Exactly. Why do we punish? We're not just listing laws here.
No, definitely not. We're trying to get straight to the philosophical core, the, you know, the engine behind consequences.
That's the plan. Moving past just, like, right and wrong definitions.
Right. Exploring how society tries to turn the moral beliefs into something tangible, something enforceable. Justice.
And our sources nail this right at the start, don't they?
They do. They state it plainly. Issues of morality are completely entwined with issues of justice. You can't really pull them apart.
Right. So morality, that gut feeling of good versus bad, somehow has to become this formal, hopefully reasonable system, justice, for when a law gets broken.
And once you make that link, the single biggest question just pops up.
What is the point of the punishment?
Yeah. What are we actually trying to achieve? Because if you don't know the why, well, how can you possibly figure out the how?
An effective consequence needs a goal.
Precisely. And what's fascinating, looking across different legal systems in history, is you see basically four main answers.
Four distinct answers. And they often clash, don't they? They pull in different directions.
Completely. It's a real tension.
Okay, let's unpack these using the framework from our sources. These four pillars of punishment.
Sounds good.
And it's worth noting, like the sources mentioned with the Scottish system, real-world justice often tries to juggle all four.
Right, tries to blend them. But the goals themselves, fundamentally, they can be at odds.
So where do we start? Pillar number one.
Let's begin with the one that looks forward, maybe the most optimistic one. Reformation.
Ah, the rehabilitative goal.
Mm-hmm.
This is the idea that punishment isn't just about, you know, settling a score for the past.
No, it's about fixing the future.
Actively trying to change the criminal.
Yeah, so they become, hopefully, a law-abiding citizen again. Productive, even.
And the focus is internal, isn't it? On the person.
Totally. It relies heavily on giving them practical tools. Things like education, job training.
Counseling, maybe.
Therapy. Exactly. Anything aimed at the root causes of why they broke the law, so they genuinely don't want to do it again.
But, I mean, this approach has its challenges. It sounds good, but...
Oh, absolutely. It's expensive, for one.
And takes time. A lot of time.
And it rests on this belief that, well, everyone can be rehabilitated.
Which, let's be honest, public opinion often struggles with that idea.
Mm-hmm.
Especially for really serious crimes.
Definitely. So, if reformation is looking inward and forward...
Then the next one, retribution, looks back... And outward.
Precisely. This is the paying the debt goal.
This feels like the emotional core for a lot of people, doesn't it?
I think so. That sense that the criminal must suffer for what they did.
It's about satisfaction for the victim, for society, restoring some kind of balance.
That's the idea. But legally, it's important to draw a line between retribution and just, well, plain vengeance.
Okay, how so?
The sources bring up this concept of just deserts.
Right, I saw that.
It's not about blind revenge. It's actually about proportionality.
Meaning
the state enforces a rule. Yes, suffer for the crime, but only to the degree that balances the scales. It's meant to stop excessive punishment.
Okay, so retribution is the state saying you owe a debt.
Mm-hmm.
And proportionality, the just deserts part, is the check that stops the state saying you owe us everything.
You got it. That's the intended safeguard.
But you can see the conflict already. If you focus heavily on retribution.
You're probably not spending much on reformation, right?
Right. A prison designed mainly to make suffering fit the crime. Well, job training might not be top of the list.
And that's where the practical conflict really bites. Resources, focus, philosophy, they clash.
Okay, so that's two. Reformation and retribution. What's pillar number three?
Pillar three shifts the focus again. Away from the criminal's internal state where they're dead.
And onto everyone else.
Exactly. Onto public safety. This is protection.
Or incapacitation, sometimes called.
Yes. Conceptually, maybe the simplest goal.
Just keep society safe from dangerous people.
Primarily, yeah. Especially repeat offenders or those who commit violent crimes.
And the main tool is obvious.
Imprisonment. Physical removal.
Lock them up. They can't hurt anyone out here.
The result is, quite simply, a safer society because that specific threat is contained. That's the argument.
But it's not just about prison walls, is it?
No. Protection also shows up in things like electronic tagging.
Long probation periods.
Yeah.
Sex offender registries.
All of those fit under the protection umbrella. But there's a critique here, too, a pretty significant one.
Which is?
When we focus purely on protection sometimes... Are we punishing based on what we fear someone might do?
Ah, punishing for future risk, not just past actions.
It can blur that line. It's a tricky ethical area.
Okay. That brings us to the fourth pillar, deterrence.
Right. Deterrence. This one shares that preventative idea with protection.
But it works differently, on a bigger scale.
Yeah, much broader. It's aimed at the community. Deterrence is the preventative goal.
How does it prevent?
The idea is to make the punishment so severe, so unpleasant,
that it puts people off, deters them.
Exactly. It aims to deter two groups, the specific offender from doing it again, that specific deterrence.
Okay.
And crucially, the general public from ever doing it in the first place, general deterrence.
Setting an example.
A very strong example. And this is where, as you said earlier, the philosophical rubber really hits the moral road.
Because
to really maximize that deterrent effect, the argument often goes towards quite extreme punishments. Public warnings.
The sources gave some pretty stark examples.
They did. Like the idea that if a thief knows they'll lose a hand, they just won't steal. Full stop.
Or if potential murderer knows the penalty is execution, they won't kill.
The goal there isn't really reform. You could argue it goes beyond simple retribution, too.
It's about creating this powerful fear, this negative association with the act itself.
Yes. So strong that everyone avoids the behavior.
Does that actually work? Especially the extreme examples.
Well, the evidence is really debated, highly contested, particularly for crimes driven by impulse or passion or desperation.
Not cold calculation.
Exactly. And the source material kind of nudges us to question it, doesn't it? If execution truly deterred murder.
Then places with the death penalty shouldn't have murders anymore.
But they do, which suggests that maybe, just maybe, the fear of a future consequence doesn't always stop someone in a highly emotional or desperate moment.
Okay. So those are the four. Reformation, changing the person.
Mm-hmm.
Retribution, paying the debt. Protection, keeping society safe. And deterrence, setting an example.
And the constant push and pull between these four, that's what really shapes our justice systems. It's messy.
Yeah, you can see how they don't easily fit together.
Not at all. And this is where it gets really interesting for you listening right now.
How so?
Because to really get a grip on justice, you need to connect these big ideas back to your own life, your own experiences.
You mean think about times I've been punished?
Exactly. By parents, teachers, maybe an employer, even the police, or just friends. We often react instinctively when we give out consequences.
But looking back, what was the actual point?
Mm-hmm.
What was the underlying goal?
Was your mom grounding you purely for retribution, making you pay?
Or was it deterrence trying to scare me straight so I wouldn't do it again?
Yeah. Or when a teacher takes marks off for late work, is that protection? Like protecting the fairness of the grading?
Or is maybe reformation?
Yeah.
Trying to teach me better time management.
Good question. And the sources push us to ask the next critical thing. Okay, you identified the motive. Did it work?
Was the punishment actually effective? Did it achieve what it set out to do?
Because often when punishment fails, it might be because the person giving it out wasn't even clear themselves which goal they were really aiming for. Or they were trying to hit all four at once and ended up achieving none.
That makes sense. Trying to do too much, maybe.
Or just acting out of frustration without a clear why. This internal conflict, this choice between competing aims, it's why legal systems get so incredibly complex.
Like the Scottish model trying to balance all four you mentioned.
Exactly. The sources point out that systems like that explicitly tell courts you need to consider all these aims when sentencing.
Because they recognize the trade-offs.
Right. They know a purely retributive sentence might kill any chance of rehabilitation.
And a purely rehabilitative one might leave the public and victims feeling like justice wasn't done. No protection, no debt paid.
Finding that balance point, it's incredibly difficult.
Which leads us right to that big moral question the material raises.
Mm-hmm.
Do any of these purposes just feel more right than others? Morally better?
Yeah, like, is trying to change someone inherently better than making them suffer for what they did? Is reformation morally superior to retribution?
It's tempting to say yes, isn't it? The compassionate choice.
It is tempting, but the answer isn't simple. If you completely abandon retribution, what about the victims? Do they feel ignored? Invalidated.
That's a fair point. Justice needs to feel like justice for them too.
But if you focus only on retribution, on suffering, you create a system that maybe prioritizes pain over the potential for change, over redemption.
Which raises its own deep questions about, well, the value we place on human life and the possibility of change itself.
That knife edge balance point.
Mm.
That's probably where real justice has to try and operate. in that messy middle ground.
Wow. Okay. That really ties it all together. So let's do a quick recap of this deep dive.
Good idea.
We started with that fundamental link. Morality and justice are intertwined.
Yep. Can't have one without thinking about the other.
Then we broke down the four big, often conflicting answers to the question, why do we punish?
We had deterrence, putting people off.
Protection, keeping society safe.
Reformation, changing the offender.
And retribution, making them pay the debt.
These four are like the hidden framework holding up every law, every sentence, everywhere.
And to really make this stick, we've got a specific task for you, the listener. Something to chew on.
Yeah, something to help you keep grappling with the real weight of these ideas.
So for homework, we strongly suggest you watch an episode of Black Mirror.
Series 2, Episode 2. It's called White Bear.
It's, well, it's an unsettling but brilliant look at punishment. A real thought experiment.
Definitely unsettling. In White Bear, you'll see the justice system using a very, very specific and, let's say, pure form of punishment.
For a convicted child murderer. The sources specifically point to this scenario.
So your task, building directly on our chat about those four pillars,
is to watch it and ask yourself this question. What single form of punishment is mostly being used in that episode? Which pillar does it represent most strongly?
And then the really tough part, do you think it's morally acceptable?
It forces you right up against the limits, especially of pure retribution, its effectiveness, its morality.
It's the perfect way to test all this theory against a really provocative, fictional example.
Okay. Until next time, keep questioning the purpose behind the consequence.